Let's spend some time discussing real estate and real estate investment trusts. Now, folks, real estate is an entire course unto itself, so this is just very short introduction and discussion of real estate investments. And it is often said that real estate has created more millionaires, more wealth for individuals in the United States than any other investment class. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it certainly can be very, very profitable or a disaster. So, let's get started on slide number two. There are two ways you can own real estate. The first way, and the one that most people think of, is through direct real estate investments. As the investor, you hold the title to the property. You go down to the county courthouse or the admin building, and your name is on that property. And it's public information. Anybody can look at that. Your home, for many people, will be the most important real estate investment. And when people say, well, why shouldn't I invest in real estate? Why should I invest in stocks? Well, you own a home? Yeah, I do own a home. Well, you already have some real estate investments. So by investing in stocks and mutual funds, financial investments, securities, as opposed to real property, which means it's attached to the ground, you're diversifying, right? But there are other forms of real estate investment. Many people will want a vacation home, and there are certain rules regarding the taxation, depending on how much you rent it out, if you rent it out. And then rental property. Oh my goodness, it's a whole course unto itself. And by the way, folks, Southwestern Community College teaches rental property. And then the most gains, the largest potential gains, come from undeveloped land. But that's a whole other world, folks, and that is not something that the individual neophyte investor would be recommended to get involved with right away. You need to have a lot of experience and or just a whole lot of money. Because it poses enormous risks. All your money is riding on a single parcel of land which is not generating any cash flow. There's no rent. But you still have to pay the property taxes. And so you will sometimes see this undeveloped land for a tax sale because people just stop paying the taxes because they got sick and tired of waiting until they could raise the money or get the zoning, or it just didn't seem economically feasible to develop the land. You will have no guarantee that you'll be able to develop the land, depending on the current political climate or whether or not it's, as we said, economically feasible. So there's an old saying in the real estate industry called, never invest in dirt. But obviously, somebody has to do it, right? Somebody has to develop the undeveloped land. But it probably won't be you or me. Slide number three. The other way to invest in real estate, and certainly the easier way for most of us, is to invest indirectly. Indirect real estate investments. And for those of us who have studied stocks extensively, you may be interested in what are called REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts. Now, they're technically not stocks, they're not corporations, they're trusts, and trusts are tricky, but for all practical purposes, to you and me, they look like a stock, they trade like a stock, they pay, they don't really pay dividends, they pay what are called fees from operations, but they look like dividends, and they're out there, folks. There aren't actually that many, it's a fairly small universe, and you'll often see sometimes mutual fund that invests in real estate. Well, what they're doing is they're investing in real estate investment trusts. So when you go into a Walmart or a Ralph's or some other shopping mall or a strip mall, do you think that Target or Kmart owns that property? Sometimes, but mostly no. They enter into 30, 40-year leases and lease the property, and they lease it from the Real Estate Investment Trust. The Real Estate Investment Trust manages the property, and they make sure that it's kept up to code and in good shape, and they rent out the auxiliary and ancillary and accompanying storefronts and the like. And real estate investment trusts also own big apartment complexes and warehouses and office buildings. Right, they're in the business of real estate. So you can think of it like a mutual fund that instead of investing in stocks, bonds, or other securities, financial investments, they invest in real estate. And some of them have done very good, folks. Some of them have done very well. They pay usually around 6, 7, 8%, sometimes more. Right now they're paying a whole lot less. Why? Because all income in generating investments such as bonds and short-term investments are paying a whole lot less. On another vein are real estate syndicates and limited partnerships. Now, these were very popular, but they were hurt quite a bit by the 1986 tax reform bill, which split income into passive and active income. But they're still out there, and they're similar to a real estate investment trust. Now, what's the difference? They can be a little harder to get rid of. The liquidity can be difficult. Because a real estate investment trust trades like a stock. So you call up your broker, you go online, and you sell your 100 shares of the trust. Whereas a syndicate or a limited partnership, you may have a difficult time finding some other investor to take them off your hands. Or there may be some limitations to when or not you can sell it. Oh, by the way, be careful. Some REITs are non-trading REITs. And I don't know enough about these to really give you an informed opinion. But from what I know, stay away from them. It's from what I've read and seen and the examples I've seen of these non-tradable REITs. They seem to me a lot like these syndicates and limited partnerships. Now, for those people who are in the higher income brackets, you can actually buy what are called tax credits. Huh? Yeah, well, they're specialized investments in low-income housing and the like, and you essentially are buying a tax credit. And the idea is eventually that the investment's going to pay off and actually make money down the line. But right now, you can think of it like a nonprofit organization, and you're gifting to charity. But it's not charity, folks. Don't get me wrong. I mean, these things are trying to make money, but they tend to be losers up front, and then hopefully down the line you'll win out. In the financial planning and money management class, when we talk about housing, we talk about equity sharing. And this is actually a pretty good way to help the younger folks in your family just starting out to buy a home. And often the parents, the grandparents, have some disposable cash to invest. And so the parents, the grandparents, will come up with the down payment for the younger couple just starting out, or individual. And the younger couple or the individual will live in the home, make the payments, and as the house appreciates, which is what houses normally do during normal times, they share in the equity appreciation. Now, it doesn't have to be family, folks. Don't get me wrong. It can be business relationship with somebody that you're not tied to via family ties, but it often works out that way. And normally we recommend never lend to family or borrow from family, unless you as the lender are just thinking that, like, well, it's a gift. Okay, if I get paid back, great. If I don't, all right. Well, be careful, because there could be certain tax implications if you do that. And if you are in that position, either take a look at, what is it, Chapter 7 of the Business 121 class, or just shoot me an email. Lastly, you can invest in mortgages. You can be the mortgage company, the bank, the credit union. First trust deeds are called, or first mortgages, or second trust deeds, or second mortgages. It's not an equity position in that you're not the owner of the property. You're the owner of the debt on the property. Now, wait a minute. Why isn't this person going to a bank or a credit union or a mortgage company? Well, they already did and got turned down. So they're looking for what is called in the industry hard money. Right. You're going to get 12% on a home loan when the banks and the credit unions are offering 3.5%. What do we say about high return? Right. And I only knew of one individual who, I met somebody else, but I knew one individual who did this, and he was very picky about who he lent to. Very, very picky. And I've lost track since, but he said he was doing okay, but oh boy. Because what a nightmare you could wind up with, having to foreclose. And, well, this is what the banks and the credit unions have been, not so much the credit unions, they were not stupid, but the banks and the mortgage companies from the 2008 collapse have been going through this for years now. Slide number 4. Commercial property. You know, folks, it's a whole other ball game. And in San Diego, But for many people, they'll start with a duplex or a small apartment building, small hotel, an office building, a store. But don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow for several years, because you think the prices of residential homes and condominiums and the like have gone up in San Diego quite a bit. They have. But commercial property just has become untouchable. Insane. And that doesn't mean, since the turmoil, there aren't good bargains. But, yeah, it's really, really, really expensive. And if you are so inclined, I would take a look at the South Bay. Those seem to be the best deals. Of course, once you go out into East County in San Diego, there are far more deals, but of course it's not as desirable property. What are we talking about here? Well, you know, in 1999, 2000, a condo in San Ysidro was selling for $80,000, $90,000. By 2006 and 7, it was selling for $320,000, $280,000. A house out in Eastlake that was selling for $300,000 in the year 2000 went up to $900,000. Exactly. So those are big jumps. Of course, they've fallen considerably since the turmoil. But a storefront building in downtown San Diego in 98, 99, 2000, $1.5 million. By 2007, they were selling for $8 or $9 million. So, yeah, right, exactly. And I, to be truthful, I haven't really followed commercial property. I haven't looked at prices lately, but I'm sure they've backed off, but not that much, to the point where they are now within the reach of the individual who maybe has $100,000, $200,000 to put down as a down payment. No, you have to come up with a whole lot more. Slide number 5. How about fixer-uppers? Well, the problem in San Diego is that it's just, in general, very competitive. People have been doing the real estate shuffle, so to speak. They've been investing in fixer-uppers for a long time. And there's just, when you go searching for these things, there's a lot of competition. And the really rundown properties you can buy. Why? Because the savvy investors say, no, that's not what I want. You know, you see, there's a reason why nobody will buy it. So my advice would be to concentrate on smaller properties first, maybe a duplex, live in one, or a triplex or a quadplex. You can live in one, rent out the others. During normal times, you want to look for low down payments and seller financing of rundown properties, because banks usually do not want to loan to distressed properties. However, banks are normally, during normal times, and these are not normal times, are all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books, because they don't want it empty. They know that when buildings are left empty, they decay quickly. So they are more than happy to lend to you so that you can take over the property. It's your property. They have the debt, but at least the place is not falling into disrepair. Now, when I say normal times, right, these, since 2008, these have not been normal times, folks. There are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of foreclosures that are still sitting on the books, supposedly, but just recently, that number seems to have dried up quickly. Now, there's probably still a lot out there, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was in 2009 and 10 and 11, when the banks were just inundated, and they were doing what was called robo-signing. They were just going through and doing as many foreclosures as they can, cutting corners, and they got in a lot of trouble for it. So there is a debate going on right now whether or not we are through the worst of the real estate debacle. There are some who are saying, yeah, it's dawn. We're here. We're seeing a new day. And there are others who are saying, it's just a head fake. We have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands more foreclosures to go through. And we'll see. That's the problem. In 2 or 3 years, 4 years, we'll see whether or not the housing has finally turned the corner. But eventually it will, folks. It's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable to live in. Now, what about property managers? Well, there are always exceptions. There are very good property managers out there. But my advice is, learn the ropes and be your own property manager, because nobody cares about your property as much as you do. You understand? But, you know, that's why there's chocolate, vanilla, and some people like strawberry. And by the way, the property managers customarily take 10% of the rent. That's the typical cost of having a property manager. So remember that. Slide number 6. When you deal with fixer-uppers and deal with rental property in general, the most important thing is to ask yourself, are you savvy dealing with repairs, and are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. One bad tenant can set you back thousands of dollars. And there are folks who can help you, folks. With the repairs, you can surround yourself with a cadre, a good group of people who can help you. And there are people who can help you with the renters. It won't be inexpensive, but because there are legal issues to be dealt with. There's a very good group. I forget what it's called. San Diego Apartment Association, right? They have plenty of resources. You can find people who have been managing apartment complexes who are skilled in what it takes to deal with bad renters. And here's a wonderful book, if you're so inclined, called Investing in Fixer Uppers. It's fun. When it comes to fixing things, I am an idiot, folks. I cannot do it, and that's why we have lots of help, my wife and I. But you want to make improvements that add perceived value. Jay DeSima says, add a white picket fence. Everybody loves a white picket fence. And in this book, he talks about how one house was settling. The foundation was settling. It's typical. It happens. And it's not necessarily dangerous. Sometimes it is. So the house looked tilted. So when they replaced the doors and windows, what did they do? Right. They tilted them the other way so the house would look straight up and down. And folks, ain't nothing new. Go look at the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Look at it carefully, and you'll see that the Italian engineers and builders did the same thing. As they started building it, it started leaning. So at the top, they turned the very top away from the lean to make it. It didn't help much. Okay. Slide number 7. And we discussed the real estate investment trusts. They are similar to mutual funds. They are pass-through investments. Run the shopping centers, the office building, the warehouses for you, the apartment complexes, and they pass through the earnings to the shareholders. And like a mutual fund, the management fees typically range between 1 and 2%. Their long-term results over many years has been in this 7 to 8% range, the fees for services and the capital gains. Right now, they're on the low end. And there's, in the face-to-face class, we would pull up a couple of these. I like this one, Realty Income Corporation. They grabbed the symbol O on the New York Stock Exchange because nobody else wants O because you can confuse it for a zero, which I don't know why they had to have a single-digit, single-character symbol. That's prestigious. You know, F for Ford, T for telephone, C for City Bank. And it's, you know, fairly well-run REIT. There used to be another one here in San Diego that's now been taken private, but it was my favorite, Pan Pacific Realty. Really well-run REIT. And they exploded in between 1998 and 2007 and 6 when they finally, somebody took them private. And I was just amazed at how well they had done. Slide number 8. What are some of the advantages of real estate investments? Well, it's a hedge against inflation. What does that mean? Well, we talked about hedging, right? Exactly. If inflation rears its ugly head in a nasty way, your real estate should do well, should hold up well. There is also the usage of financial leverage. The use of borrowed funds for investment purposes allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could do on your own with simply using cash. And we've talked about this when we were talking about margining, right? Well, it's even more powerful when you are dealing with real estate, because in the real estate world, we don't hear such phrases like my favorite phrase, make love, not loans. No, it's all about the loans. It's all about the debt. And did you get good financing, or was it very difficult to get financing, or is it favorable, or is it unfavorable? And there are a couple of problems that we'll do in the online that typify this use of borrowed funds. For real estate investment trusts and partnerships, there's usually easy entry and easy exit with REITs, maybe not with the syndicates and the limited partnerships. They might be hard to liquidate. And there's no management concerns. And one of the great things about real estate is you can't check your price on the internet every day, which is one of the major problems with stocks, because people say they're in it for the long term, and then every 10 minutes they're running to the PC, running to their, looking at their mobile device, and, oh, it went down 15 cents. What should I do? Should I sell? Oh, it went up 10 cents. Yay. You just can't do that with real estate. Well, actually, you can now. There are websites, Zillow, Trulia, that allow you to take a look at what they think the prices are. my experience is they're not very good, and the prices don't change that much. One of the reasons they're not very good is the entire real estate industry is hoping they fail. They don't want Trulia and Zillow to succeed because the real estate agents want to have the only game in town. So it's an issue. Now, what are some of the disadvantages on slide number 9? Well, liquidity. Real estate is not a liquid investment. It may be hard to sell your property or your share of the property if it's a partnership. During 2005 and 6, liquidity was not a problem. You hung up a for sale sign on Thursday, and by Saturday you had 5 offers, and Sunday you signed the sales agreement. Yeah, but knowing normal times, it may take you 3, 6, or even 9 months to sell a property. But not a problem with REITs. Remember, REITs look like a stock for all practical purposes. Normally, there is a lack of diversification when you buy property. And how many properties can you buy? Right? They want 25% down? Exactly. How much cash do you have to buy these properties? Now, REITs and partnerships definitely offer some diversification. And you have to worry about passive versus active losses in your IRS return. Management and tenant problems, which we discussed, one tenant can set you back thousands of dollars, and property values can decline. Oh yes, they can. People used to tell me, oh no, they'll never decline, they're declining, they're crashing. Slide number 10, how about your home? Well, for most people, the home is going to be the biggest asset, the major asset. And it's always normally been a pretty good hedge against inflation. Traditionally, a home produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5%, pretty similar to what bonds have done over decades. San Diego has been a noticeable exception up until the crash. And there are tremendous tax advantages. $250,000 capital gains tax-free if you're single. $500,000, up to $500,000 capital gains tax-free if you're married. That means you bought it for $200,000. If you're married, you could sell for $700,000 and not pay a dime of capital gains. But it's a home first, an investment second, in my humble opinion. There are others, mostly real estate agents, who will tell you, oh, no, this is an investment. Your home is an investment first, and it's a home second. Remember, there's always coffee and tea, and some people like cocoa. Slide number 11. This is what you'll hear people say. But my house is the best investment I ever made. And then you try to coax them and find out what else they've invested. Well, of course, it's pretty much the only investment I've ever made. Except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying, but that stuff is worthless now. And those gold coins I bought way back when the first Gulf War started back in 1991, what'd I do with those things anyway? I hope they're in the safety deposit box. You see, the bottom line for me is a house is a home first, an investment second. You live there. And many people say, well, in retirement, I'll just sell my house and move into something smaller, move into a retirement community, leave San Diego. But when you get there after 20, 30 years, it's not a house anymore. It's your home. And the vast majority of people, 6 out of 7 people, will want to live in their home in their retirement. There's always exceptions. But that's why I say it's a home first. Treat it as a home first, an investment second. And others will say differently. But what about San Diego, huh? Slide number 12, huh? What about the tremendous gains that we've seen in San Diego? Well, you know, it's not the first time prices have gone down in San Diego. And they seem to have hit bottom. That's what we're told. In fact, they seem to have turned the corner. But this happened, this seemed to have happened in 2011, and it seemed to have happened in 2012 in the spring of those 2 years. So we'll see. We'll see, you know, we'll see. But if you plan on staying here, folks, by all means, buy whatever you afford. San Ysidro, National City, I think are the two best values in the region. People go, National City is so nasty. And if you talk to people who live there, the first words out of their mouth, they'll say they just don't know. They don't know what it's like. They hear all these nasty things, and it's actually a very walkable community. That's what's important to me. San Ysidro is another walkable community. Can you walk to the bank? Can you walk to the grocery store and the post office? That's important to me, right? And maybe not important to you. Imperial Beach is also a great beach value, but don't expect to happen, you know, in 2004, 5, and 6. Don't expect that's going to happen. It'll happen again someday. Don't worry. Fear, greed. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. I may be wrong. It might happen again very soon. But don't be surprised if next year prices have fallen 10%. You talk to the real estate agents, they'll say, no, we've turned the corner. This is for real. And they may be right. But it's a long-term investment, right? Right. Slide number 13. I saw this circa 1993, and I laughed, and I just talked to the woman. I just had such a good time talking with her. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. Mm-hmm. You see, in the 1980s, starting in the late 70s, in the 1980s, real estate in San Diego was skyrocketing. And 1990, there was a brief recession, but it hit California pretty hard. And prices fell about 20%. People don't believe you. They just don't believe you. And in some cases, 25%, depending on where they were. Closer to the water, the less they fall. That's typical. And so we were talking about this, and I never forgot her. I haven't seen her in 20 years, folks. But I often wonder, did she piss it all away this time? Because the same thing happened in 2000 to 2006-7, and I had a big ongoing discussion with one of my buddies who's a much more aggressive investor than I am. And he was saying, and I was saying, you know, yeah, we both agreed that it was a bubble, that the real estate was in a bubble, that these housing prices could not be sustained, these increases of 20%, 25% a year. Just, you can't do, it can't happen. It can't happen forever. And I was saying, well, you know, Jim, I think it's going to go down 20, 25%, kind of like what happened in 1990, 91, 92. And he said, no, it's going down 50, 60%. I said, Jim, you know, real estate's not like stocks. It's not like stocks. People will do pretty much anything to stay in their house. They'll take a second job. They'll pull in a boarder. They'll sell their blood. And he said, no, you don't understand. These people, they can't make their payments. They're just lying. There were liar loans. There were people saying they were making 100 grand. They were really making only 30, 35,000. And they could afford the first year's payment, but then the payments went up over years, and it was bound to be a train wreck. And he was right. He turned out to be right, because in the ground zero areas, such as East Chula Vista, which was one of the grounds, I mean, the whole area had experienced it, but some of these areas saw tremendous run-ups, and those houses fell 50, 60%. And now, they've ticked up, yes, I will agree, I've seen it, I watched them, the prices, but whether or not it's the new day, the new dawn, remains to be seen. Slide number 14. The perfect investment. Come on, Piano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. That's what they were telling you, right? Well, beware the permanent trend. This is Andrew Tobias. I love this line. Beware the permanent trend. There ain't no such thing. Permanent trend. It's like straight curve or jumbo shrimp. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 and sold in 94. And those who bought in early 2006 and are still trying to unload the flipper condo before the bank forecloses on them. But if you plan to hold for the long term, you should do well. In fact, I think real estate is a screaming good deal now. Why? Because interest rates are very low. Very low. And prices are way down from what they were. And by the way, as I hope you have seen throughout this entire semester, there's no such thing as a perfect investment. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. Folks were saying the same things back in 1999 about stocks. Blue skies, productivity gain, the sky's the limit. We're all going to get rich, 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 rich. Uh-oh. Oh, well. Now, let's turn to real estate. Real estate. You know, 4 or 5 years later in 2003 and 4 and 5, real estate is the way to go. Slide number 15. What about leverage, huh? Huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, we have already discovered leverage. We've already discussed it in the, about margining. Haven't we? Right. But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Yes. The way you invest in real estate helps magnify your gains, right? Just as when you margin stocks, it can magnify your gains, but it can also magnify your losses. And when real estate takes a serious downturn, as it did in 2008 and 2009, the losses are incredible. The losses are total. People would ask me, you know, 2008 and 2009, well, aren't you sad about losing 40% stocks? I said, well, you know, I'm not happy about it. I'm not looking. It's not something that makes me happy, and it doesn't feel very good. But talk to the real estate investors who lost everything they had put up, their entire down payment, and now they're still on the hook for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and their house or their property is just not worth it. And so right now in the face-to-face class, we would go through the worksheet together and do the problems that are actually taken from the Business 121 book of several years ago that was written in 2004 and 5 when the real estate market was screaming. And it shows you just how exciting and how profitable real estate investing can be and just how devastating it can be. So I want you to do those on your own. There's a commentary, so take a look. Slide 16, real estate and capital gains. Wait a minute. A few slides ago, did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Well, not quite, folks. Currently, as the law stands, as long as the real estate is your primary residence, it's your home, it's what you live in, and there are tests for that you've got to look at on the IRS website. As long as it's your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years, you will pay no capital gains taxes on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. Wow. And you can do this every 2 years. And this is what a lot of people are doing. They're buying a home, fixing it up, living in it for 2 years, and then after 2 years, they're selling that, capital gains tax-free, and then buying another fixer-upper. You know, usually these people have other jobs, but these are people who are really good at drywall and plumbing and the like. So you buy this house that's in disrepair for $200,000. And you fix it up, and you're married. You sell it for $700,000. Well, that's a little bit extreme. But if you're married, no capital gains taxes. Pretty cool. By the way, if you lose money on your primary residence, that's not tax deductible. Why? Because it's a home first, and investment second. Make sense? Okay, good. And there's still some confusion because this law was changed back in the late 90s and people still get confused with the previous law, which allowed a one-time exemption of capital gains. But no, that's not true. And as we said, you have to be careful. there was a very highly celebrated and published case of a couple. Now, these people were very wealthy, but they had three properties, one in Wisconsin, as I remember, one in Arizona, and one in Florida, and they moved around quite a bit. And they sold one and tried to take the capital gains tax-free exemption on their primary residence, and the IRS ruled that it wasn't their primary residence. Because they voted in one state, they worked in another state, they had a business in our state, they had their driver's license in the third state, and so the IRS said, well, you have no primary residence. And they won in court. So, be careful. Slide number 17. Speaking of infomercials, have you seen the ads? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed surefire real estate investment kit for $395 and take our 3-day seminar for $2,995 and you will be on your way toward riches beyond your wildest dreams. And if that doesn't work and you haven't found the flippers that we told you were out there for $20,000 that you could turn around the next month and sell for $250,000, then you need to take our 5-day surefire guaranteed, no questions asked on the money back, 5-day seminar for only $9,985. And don't worry about burning those credit cards, folks, because you will pay those credit cards and all your other credit cards off in a matter of months, 1 or 2 months at the most. You think I could make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? No comment necessary. Slide number 18. So my advice, this is from yours truly on real estate. Buy a home, buy a house, make it your home. And after you've digested that purchase, then look for some rental property. But learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it. Maybe even work for a property manager for a while to get a feel for what you need to be able to do. Because for a long time, folks, you know me, I'm a big stock fan, I just thought real estate was way too expensive. I want positive cash flow from a real rental property. And you just couldn't find it in San Diego. You were playing the speculation game. You were buying high, selling higher. And it works while the music's playing. But when the music stops, right, it looks bad. But after 2008 and 9, the prices of real estate in San Diego, now not everywhere, the South Bay is one of the best places, did become reasonable enough to the point where you could actually get cash flow out of your rental property. So if you have a long-term perspective, if you're willing to put in the work, because it's a whole lot harder than buying a mutual fund, folks. Remember the PETA factor we talked about way back in Chapter 4? The pain in the... Right. Mutual funds, it ain't there. Stocks, there's a little bit of work you have to do, but not a whole lot. I mean, you have to stay on top of them and the like, but you don't have to do anything else. It's Coca-Cola that's doing the work for Coca-Cola. But when it comes to real estate, when you own your real estate, it's a lot of work, and the PETA factor is high. But, as we said at the beginning, real estate is often attributed to be the asset class, the investment class, that has created more millionaires than any other. So, you ready to go out there, folks? All right. Good luck. Now's the time with interest rates so low. See ya.